Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is a Wednesday, the 30th of October. All Hallows Eve. No, it's tomorrow. Yeah. What's today?
October 30th.
Thank you, Rosemary. It's October 30th. Good morning and welcome. It's very nice to have you all here and welcome. Let me just remind you that if you would like to join in on our discussion, and why wouldn't you want to, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We have many interesting stories to discuss. We will get right to it. Let me introduce the panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, good morning. I'm fine. The one thing I would say about people who want to write to us is we love it, you know, when everybody writes, but we're particularly interested when somebody who has never written before writes, because it's always great to hear from everybody. Right, Joe?
Yes. I think I'm reading between the lines of what you're saying, and sometimes we get a lot of letters from the same people.
Yeah, we do. That's all right, as long as they keep it to one a day. We have some people who write us all night long. I get
one
letters
a
all
day.
Night long. Yeah,
plus
and
iron. Just so you know, I mean, I don't. Sometimes I read the rules, but just so you know, we don't. We rarely, if ever, will read a letter if it doesn't come in during the show. I mean, not
yes,
that we read it, but
right.
Read it on the air.
That's right.
Because we want it to be of the moment as a reflection of what we're discussing. Does that make sense? Now,
makes
Rosemary answers.
I read them all day long. I just find you guys fascinating.
Meaning the listeners.
The listeners,
not
yeah.
Us.
Yeah. No. The listeners, they're amazing. They give me homework. They tell me things to read. They call me out. Yeah, it's great.
All good stuff. All right. Well, good morning, Alan. Terry Gibson is here as well, communications professor and former New York State Senator. Hello, Terry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Very nice to have you here with us. Chris Churchill joins us as well, Times Union columnist extraordinaire. How's everything going in the column world?
Great. Really good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We like your work.
Thank you.
Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And also our good friend Bob Griffin is here, Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Joe. Just a quick safety reminder. Tomorrow night the kids are going to be out. It's going to be wet and there's leaves on the ground, so drive carefully and have a wonderful Halloween.
Unbelievably, there's some forecast for snow tomorrow night.
I know. In fact, somebody in my North Country Facebook feed had a picture of a dusting on their car from overnight, which I thought was really interesting. So
North Country, yeah, but here snow.
No, yeah.
Five or 6 years ago. This happened. They called it Snowtober. I remember handing out.
No, I believe it was Snowmageddon.
I remember standing out on my front yard in Rhinebeck, handing out candy, standing in the snow. On Halloween. So that was maybe 6 years ago.
Terry, do you do full bars or the little bars?
Oh, you got to go with the little bars.
Not for elective office.
That's right.
Halloween?
And they say, Terry Gibson for Senate on them.
The two politicians in my life give out full candy bars to everyone in the neighborhood and buttons and stickers for mom and dad.
Wow. Just say it if you're in the right area. You know where to go.
Paid for by taxpayers.
No. I think we gave out hot cider, though. Yes, I do remember doing that. Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody wants a nice
spa
warm
day
cup
for mom and dad.
Hot cider,
here,
you know.
Here.
Maybe something special in it for the adults, you know. Hey.
Did you pour it on their head the way that the first couple poured the presents on top of the loaf?
No.
Did you see that video?
No,
that
we're
went
trying
viral?
To just keep things safe and, you know, sanitary.
Yeah.
We get a lot of kids.
We used to get a lot of kids.
Yeah, we got a lot.
Lots.
Well, you
kids.
Too, Alan, right? You get a million kids in your neighborhood.
There's no question. Unfortunately, the Chartocks, this is by way of an announcement, are going to be elsewhere this year for the first time in a long time. And, you know, we last year, I think we gave out 1,000 pieces of candy. 1,000.
Oh, wow.
Hollenbeck Avenue, where we live, is where the bus people...
Give
bus
the address,
people.
Alan.
Yeah. And the information that you're going to be out of town for a little while.
They bus people in from all over. The Egremonts, for example, and Hillsdale. They just keep coming, and it's the wonderful outfits and wonderful kids.
Bus in for trick
or
treating.
Oh no, we did that. You know, when I was a kid, we lived in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And so there were homes nearby, but not a lot. So they would, yeah, they'd bring us down to a neighborhood of development, and that's usually where we go trick-or-treating.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's fairly common. All right, let's get on with the other story, as though I'm sure our listeners aren't at all upset that we're talking about this instead of other issues, but we'll get started. White House Ukraine expert testified yesterday, and he sought to correct the transcript of the Trump call. Imagine that. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who heard President Trump's July phone call with Ukraine's president and was alarmed, testified that he tried and failed to add key details to the rough transcript. Here's what we learned yesterday. He said that the transcript omitted crucial words and phrases, and that his attempts to include them failed. The omissions, the colonel said, included Mr. Trump's assertion that there were recordings of former Vice President Joseph Biden discussing Ukraine corruption, and an explicit mention by Ukraine's president, Burisma Holdings, the energy company whose board employed Mr. Biden's son, Hunter. Colonel Vindman, who appeared on Capitol Hill wearing his dress uniform, his Army dress uniform, and military medals, told House impeachment investigators that he tried to change the reconstructed transcript made by the White House to reflect the omissions. But while some of his edits appeared to have been successful, those two corrections were not made, and I am nothing but a radio host, but it seems as though those two corrections may have been fairly important.
He ascribed no motive to why the fixes were not made. Others have.
Did they really seem that important to you? To me, they seem almost kind of like they're almost obvious. I mean, we knew he was talking about Biden. We knew he was talking about the oil company. Why does it matter so much if the name of the oil company is mentioned?
Well, because I think it goes to credibility. The fact is, it may not have been that important, but the fact that he's giving these kinds of details, buttress his standing as a witness.
Oh, that's true. And I'm not saying that the changes shouldn't have been made, but they just don't seem earth-shattering.
Let
me jump to 2 seconds, though. You know, Chris, one of the things that bothered me, though, is that this sense of cover-up. Mm-hmm. And, the way they handled the transcript and locked it away in the top secret area, the way that they chose to
Do you blame them?
To edit the document? I don't. But, it obviously wasn't quite as perfect as being made.
So can we assume amongst this group, can we assume that if there wasn't any problem with it, then you would have left it in?
Yes.
Well, that's why you have to remember that this goes back to the fact that this never was really a transcript. What this was a PR communication strategy that they decided to call a transcript.
Right.
They released this on purpose, edited it in a very specific way, eliminating key elements for the very strict purpose of trying to get control of the message and take the lead in controlling it, which they have done a pretty good job of.
Yes.
And now it continues to fall to the Democrats to try to poke holes and rechange the narrative that this really isn't a transcript.
As usual, Terry has it exactly right, I think. What's most interesting to me is not that these were important edits, but that we find out about them after we've listened to Trump talk for a long time about how this was an exact and perfect transcript done by very talented people. You recall all that, and it was not at all. He didn't just mention this, as he's also said, but it was a mention. It's no big pressure. No, there were a lot of specifics. He wanted specific information and asked for it. And we're now finding that out.
To me, Joe, this is truly, in all capital letters, the smoking gun. That if you have any questions about why impeachment needs to move through the House and the Senate needs to actually rule on this, this is the prime witness. And I would be remiss if I didn't raise how disgusted I am at the personal attacks that have occurred. I've been shocked at people like Congressman Yolo and Duffy and others coming out the way they have. It's there was a time where you know, just
about the lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, and they're ad hominem attacks too. I mean, they're attacking his person. You know, the idea of questioning his loyalty because he is upholding his oath to the Constitution and to the people. I'm so disgusted with the depravity of the Trump supporters, and it's really about the cult of this one individual, which is exactly what the founding fathers feared. It's exactly why we have impeachment.
Alan? Yes, but what's so interesting about this are people like Liz Cheney and others stepping up to defend the colonel and to say we don't act this way towards patriots. That, I thought, might be a little bit of a hint of an opening with the Senate Republicans who are beginning to get a little bit nervous about Trump. Don't you think that was a sort of remarkable thing?
No, I think she did it for political reasons.
Right.
She wants the veterans vote, and so she had to do that.
So what's wrong with that?
That's cynical.
Nothing. No, it is cynical, and I that's fine. I just don't think it's because she is really defending the colonel or what he had
to say. Well, yeah, but that's what politicians do.
I saw what politicians did with the senator at Purdue from Georgia who went on and said, I've heard enough. There's no way in hell that I will ever vote for impeachment. So forget all the Republican talking points about getting it all out in the open and hearing everything. He's heard enough to already decide that, to me, is real Republican politics right now.
Yeah, but Rosemary, I was heartened by her comments because I feel finally there's at least somebody in the GOP leadership.
It wasn't just her either. Yeah.
It's true, but I thought her comments were some of the most forceful that I've seen from the leadership. And again, if you go back to what I expect from the GOP. The idea of a war veteran, a wounded war veteran, someone who has dedicated his life to the safety of this country and the safety of our people, to be so dragged through the mud, particularly by a man that deferred service to the country because of bone spurs, and I put that in sort of air quotes.
Alleged bone spurs.
Did you forget what he said about McCain? Did you forget the whole attack on the Khan family? This is nothing new. He's been attacking military people unless they do his bidding as his generals, as in the Baghdadi raid, since he got into office. It's nothing new.
Yeah,
it's
and
awful.
That Rosemary is right, and that's why I don't find Liz – is it Liz Cheney?
Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney's comments to be that moving to me, because were they? Where were they when they were when he was attacking all these other veterans? Where have they been? Why is it taken until now for them to come out?
See, I told you that Terry is always right.
You know, you're such a Democrat.
But
truly, it is significant. We watched with Dick Nixon when he went down. Everybody was swearing allegiance every day, and then boom, woof, when it happened, it was, as Joe and I always say, a whoosh moment, and everybody went the other way, and he was done. I think the fact that a senior, and she is senior, a Republican operative, gets up there and says that, I think has got to be somewhat of a signal that some of these gloves may come off.
I agree with you, Alan. I think there are some cracks in the foundation. There were a lot of Republicans who said similar things yesterday, but obviously she is a kind of a well-known last name and is kind of a well-known person. But I do think, it's still a long shot that Trump is removed from office, but I do think, there are cracks. There are signs that a lot of Republican senators are really getting tired of all this and would really love to move on if they could,
it isn't only that they're getting tired of it;
they're weary of it. I think.
This is making them vulnerable in terms of re-election. Mm-hmm. That's what this is about. You know, these guys are the hearts of snakes, and if they have hearts, I don't remember. but this is a whole other This is a whole other thing.
And everybody out there who is snake supporters, you don't have to send letters in support.
No,
snakes.
Yeah, we know they have them. Yeah, the snakes have hearts. Yeah,
I know this is anecdotal and probably silly, but if it just seems that if you're watching what's going on in a broad sense, if you're a lawmaker, Republican or Democrat, but in this case, particularly Republicans, and you're watching the world, and you're watching the president walk into an arena, and everybody get up and boo. And which, by the way, will be corrected when I predict when he goes to the MMA fight this weekend at Madison Square Garden. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, that's his next.
Apparently, since the
baseball game didn't go well.
He's going to only go to friendly venues.
He's going to go to in Madison Square Garden on Saturday, I think. And, it's the day before the marathon, so it ought to be really great for New York City traffic.
and Halloween weekend.
Yeah, it'll be really popular.
But for all of our listeners down in New York City, that's an opportunity to buy a ticket to the MMA event so they could boo the president. It'd be better than going to see the fights.
He may get booed there anyways, regardless. I mean,
absolutely. It doesn't take that many people.
Yeah, that's the thing about politicians showing up in any event. If only
true.
If only 25% of the crowd is booing, it sounds like everybody is.
Ever been booed at a Little League game, Terry?
No, but I threw out the first pitch once. But speaking of MMA, since you brought it up, I just want to point out that when I was in the state senate, I voted against legalizing MMA in New York. I would still vote against it. So if I'd had it my way, there would not have even been an event for Trump to show up to.
And maybe that's why you're not in the state senate anymore.
Maybe. Could be. You never know.
Wow.
About these things. But,
the MMA vote is huge.
I just can't support it. I'm sorry.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We also include your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We have several. Let's get to those right now. We go to Paul, who said, word rate analysis has been done on the transcript. People on the call said it lasted half an hour, but when read aloud, the transcript is only 11 minutes long. Even then, it was read aloud slowly. That's a lot of missing audio. I've heard a lot of different things about this. I've heard about translation. I've heard a bunch of different reasons of why that could be.
Yeah, but if you add that, the 11 minutes and 18 minutes comes out to 29. Don't you see?
Yes.
But if Inman is credible, then he would have mentioned all that other. There would have been a whole bunch of other stuff he would have mentioned yesterday, right? He only mentioned the two things that he thought weren't in there that should have been in there. And if 18 minutes was missing, then he would have had a lot more to say.
But didn't you find it interesting, or maybe equally interesting, that, I mean, he did, there was other stuff that was left out that he did ask for that did get added. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the original run was even less than they would have had.
I think he had two of the four that he requested. It was just the two that were the ones that were particularly sticky.
There was one other thing that I thought was very interesting that we learned. An adorable picture of the two twins coming over together when they were 3 years old. But that the brother, the twin brother, works in a White House.
He
is with the colonel on this thing. So I don't think we learned enough about that, but apparently the brother has guts also.
I just, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I probably am. But I feel like I live in a parallel universe when I see these things and I read it and I hear someone. And this corroborates, we were talking about this yesterday, that it was the New York Times who went and said that the original transcript and the whistleblower complaint, that everything has now been corroborated from this various testimony as to have actually occurred. But you do feel like you live in a parallel universe when then you still hear people say, well, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Well that's it may not, but it may not be enough.
Yeah.
It may not be. In other words, it's going to take a lot for those Republican senators to change their minds and vote for conviction. So when they say it's not enough, it may not be enough.
It may not be, because what really matters is public opinion and public sentiment.
Absolutely.
And if what has been shown so far isn't enough to sway that, then it isn't enough. It's just a fact.
Well, again, my experts on Fox News say not a chance in hell he will be convicted.
They're probably right. I mean, it is a slim chance. But you never know. If somebody like Bolton gets up, or some of the other people who have been kind of unceremoniously booted out of the administration get up and say some things that are really damning, Who knows?
I agree with you, Chris.
Not going to happen.
You don't know it's not going to happen.
No, Bolton is not going to happen. His whole career, like that of Barr, is about building up the power of the presidency. This is for him more than about Trump. I don't ever see him. If he testifies, it'll be by subpoena and very limited. You know, just this is Trump.
I think what's going to be interesting to watch, though, is that, you know, if you think about the veteran community, which has typically been one of the core supporters of a GOP ticket, watching their own get ripped down, watching you know, decorated veterans who have served or are active members who have served get torn apart by Trump and his proxies, they have to start to be questioning their support for both the GOP and this administration. And I think that's you can't lose track of what that could potentially mean for the 2020 election, and more importantly, beyond.
Yes. We have more letters. Let's go to those. We go to Russ, who says the impeachment process will apparently wind up in January. The president will argue that there should be investigation of the Bidens, and the Senate will vote down the articles of impeachment. The lingering effects will be a lot of shady charges against Biden and primary victories for an unelectable Democratic candidate score for Trump.
Well, it may happen that way.
I think they should speed up the process. I think January is too late. I think it just symbolic.
Remember when they were talking about Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think symbolically being in the same year as the election makes it harder for people to vote for it.
Well, not like that. If you're in a House and you looked at the testimony from that they've been receiving, there is enough in my mind. They have the smoking gun. They have all the collaboration. They have all the information that they need, and put the cards on the table. But also put the cards on the table with the Senate that if you – okay, all right, Sonny Perdue, if you're not going to support – Senator Perdue, if you are not going to support this, then go on record. The same way the Republicans were saying the Democrats need to go on record on the impeachment, I'm saying the Republicans need to go on record in the Senate and they got to be held accountable at the ballot box.
Well, I think that's right, and I think that there's a very good chance you don't need to lose everybody, right? You need to lose some, and that's what they're worried about. They're worried about losing purples, and they're worried about losing some people and losing an election as a result of making a bad choice here.
Well, that's why I still think that the Senate and Mitch McConnell are not done pulling tricks out of their hat, because I don't think they really want a situation where they have to put their members on record. I think that's very dangerous for them, and they would rather not have to take that vote. So I'm not convinced it's going to make it to the Senate yet.
We got this letter from Peter, who says the label Never Trumper is meant to suggest that someone is not objective in their unwavering opposition to Trump. I think we should introduce the label Always Trumper to suggest an equivalent lack of objectivity. We go to John, who says the subject line is Snowtober, so you see where we're going here. I believe it was 2013. I was working on Hurricane Sandy response. The anniversary was yesterday, by the way. And driving a coworker who had come to do disaster recovery from Beacon to New York City, where I intended to see Devo live.
Oh, that's sweet.
That must have been fun.
Whip it good.
Working in a coal mine. But 84 was in whiteout conditions, and we had to exit via the on-ramp and go back to Beacon. Very sad day for all. You missed Devo, for God's sakes.
There are red flower pots out there for you.
All right, I'll bite. Devo?
Devo was post-Weavers, and it was...
as so much was.
They had like red flower pots in their head. Mm-hmm. There were four of them, and they had a couple hits.
Somebody's got to sing, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
With a good satisfaction, sort of punkish. Yeah, I don't know if they came out as CBGB, but they
can we request Whip It coming out of this? All right, Clarence says, can the unedited transcript be retrieved from the secret server? This is a question for Bob. Can the unedited transcript be retrieved from the secret server? If so, who has the authority to give the order, and under what circumstance?
Well, I mean, the president could absolutely clear it. I think the problem you're going to find is that there isn't an unedited transcript. This really isn't a transcript. This is the problem. Everybody says it's verbatim. It's not verbatim. This was just at a high level of notes. So
it's a reconstruction.
It is.
There is no unedited transcript out there. Yeah.
Well, is there from the Ukrainian side? Have we cleared that?
Well, what do you mean?
That's a good point.
The president of Ukraine was on the line. Doesn't he have a protocol for keeping track of this
stuff?
Well, he could have been taping it. It seems like nobody knows. Somebody must know, but we haven't. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm sure
if you were him, would you tell?
Well, no, right. Not at all. Alan, hit it right on the head.
He's been real careful not to, but that could change. Yeah. I see him changing more reality than any of those Georgia Republicans, et cetera, to change their mind.
As far as the let me go to this next letter here, which is from Kevin, who says the tapes did Nixon in, as Alan has indicated. They would do the same to Trump. Sometimes you have to think like the opposition. If the roles were reversed, the Republicans would be clamoring for the tapes. But we don't know that there are tapes.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. No. You know, one of the differences between the Nixon, well, there's many differences, obviously, between Nixon and Trump. But just in terms of the way the media is set up today, Trump's microphone, his ability to broadcast whatever he has on his mind any minute to the nation is so much more advanced than anything Nixon had access to. So Trump's ability to control the narrative, to control the message, I think is just way beyond anything Nixon could have ever imagined. That's why when Trump says this is the transcript, so many people just accept it and say, yes, well, this is the transcript.
There's a whole lot of really interesting looks at whether Nixon would have gotten off. Would he have been impeached or convicted and impeached had he had social media and Fox News both to deal with, to protect him?
Yeah, if you think about it, he had the three main, you know, it was CBS, NBC, ABC. Right. And they were actually much more sort of neutral arbitrators at the time. This, you know, he definitely would have benefited from having his own microphone and his own state-run propaganda.
All right, we go to John, who says, isn't it the case that the only data coming out of these closed-door sessions are selective one-side leaks by the Democratic Party? Seems like the panel was bamboozled in a big way and for a long time by Schiff in the Russian collusion investigation. Is history repeating itself? By the way, the Republicans aren't showing cracks. Example, latest Graham bill in the Senate.
I do think they're showing cracks. I don't think all of the leaks are from the Democrats. There's so much ridiculous schoolyard activity going on between both the Democrats and the Republicans, including storming a skiff with your recording equipment, which would have gotten me fired or anybody in the bureaucracy fired. I think the writer is again trying to paint Schiff and the Democrats as liars and leakers, and I don't think that's fair.
I do think though that there would that if these were open hearings, the impact would be far greater. Yeah, I do think they're making a bit of a mistake by keeping it behind closed doors at this point.
Well, they know that, right? I mean, they know that, and that's why they're announcing they're going to be open hearings.
Right, but I think yesterday should have been open. I think they should. I mean, I'm for moving this process along, I guess, as quickly as possible. And part of that is just getting it all out there in the open and letting everybody see and letting everybody make their decision. Go ahead.
I just want to correct the writer about being bamboozled on Mueller. We were not. There was Russian interference. There was Russian collusion. You have been bamboozled by Barr's mischaracterization of that report.
Yeah, but back to Chris's comment, though. I don't necessarily agree. I think they have to do fact-finding, and I'd rather see them do fact-finding in a way that allows them to figure out whether it really is any fire with the smoke in order to move forward with a public process. I think if they started with the public process first and there was nothing there, then everybody would have said, oh, this is horrible. Look what you did. You dragged this poor man's reputation through the mud. They actually protected his reputation, and now there is enough there to go forward. And I think it was the proper step. Mm.
Yes and no. I think the other side to that is they're not stupid. They want to know what they're going to get before they go open. If they got something that didn't help them, you know, I mean, I wish I could say that it was all, you know, on the best side of mankind, but I don't think so. I think they know what they're doing.
Yeah, don't give them too much credit, though, but, you know, it's...
Well, if the shoe was on the other foot, the Republicans would be doing it exactly the same way if they decided to pursue this.
Two wrongs don't make a right.
No, there's a proper way to do these things, both politically
Did you just moan?
Yeah,
and legally, and I think they're doing the right course of action at the moment.
Let's find out what Rosemary's moan was all about.
My moan was about this, two wrongs don't make a right. Because the other thing you always say, Alan, is woulda, shoulda. And those two cancel out each other. It would be great if two wrongs don't make a right if either side thought that way. But they don't. And this is a tit-for-tat game, and that's what you're seeing. Benghazi, and now what's happening, and Mueller, and now what's happening with Ukraine.
To which
the
I
way
say,
politics
so,
works.
To which I say, so? I couldn't agree with you more. It is the way politics works, and I know why they're doing it. They're doing it to protect themselves.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Well now that everyone is in agreement, we're going to go to a break. Then we can fight during the break and screw that all up.
Do we have Devo queued up?
Yes. We'll be back
right
after
this.
I'm
looking forward to the Devo.
It's a roundtable dance party. Good morning.
I'll take the Weavers any day.
My next request, Mike, is Devo's Working in a Cold Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, another great one. Okay. That's for John, who wrote to us, who had a very
hopefully that makes up
traumatic
missing.
Experience of missing Devo because of Superstorm Sandy. Let's go to more letters. We go to, do you want the one where they don't like us? Corey. Yeah. Those are always fun. Corey says, first, I like to say that it's just like a Democrat to try to tell other people how to live. You don't have to support MMA fighting, and one way to do that is by not buying a ticket and not going to the event. The wonderful thing about living in a free society, which Democrats tend to forget, is that you can let other people make stupid choices as long as they're not hurting you or anyone else who hasn't voluntarily asked for it. It's crazy to me that you guys think that passing laws against people's freedom of choice is a proper use of government. Yeah, Terry.
Okay, I would just like to insert abortion and reproductive rights in place of MMA there, Mr. Republican.
Well, look, when we're talking about democracy, if we're talking about democracy, if that's what the letter is about, democracy allows legislation to be brought to the floor and for the people that were elected to represent their district to take a vote. And I took a vote against it, and obviously more people took a vote for it, and it passed. That, to me, is democracy. So you can now buy a ticket to go watch people fight in Madison Square Garden.
I'll do with respect to Terry. I do agree with the letter writer. I mean, if people want to watch MMA, we're really getting off topic. If people want to watch MMA, it's not my cup of tea, but, you know, if they want to watch it, let them watch it.
And
but
thanks again, says Corey.
Well, they can watch it, but you have to pass a law to, you know, these things are regulated.
Yeah, but New York was at that point the only state that was not allowing it.
Yeah, but now they're not. Due to democracy, we had a process that allowed it to become legal, and so what is your point exactly?
My point.
He's on Team Corey for the moment.
Yeah, I'm on Team Corey.
And thanks again for the continuous entertainment every morning as you guys rub your hands together looking for any inkling that Trump will be impeached. The whole thing is a joke and everybody knows it. The Democrats are just going to guarantee that this guy wins again.
Is that Team Corey still?
Yes.
No. I'm off that team.
I'm
with them on the MMA, a little bit less on the impeachment. I do think it's risky for Democrats, though. I mean, I've said that a bunch of times that, you know, this could backfire.
But there is, you know, just on a serious note, there is a role of government, though, even with the MMA, is that you got to make sure that there's regulations in place that would protect people from being abused by the MMA. This idea that, you know, let's be honest, basically it's two people getting in the ring and beating the heck out of each other.
Yeah.
And there needs to be at least some sort of protection to make sure that it is voluntary and it's as safe as it possibly can be. Other than that, whether they have it or not, I think is a different issue. But there is an overall health and safety issue.
Make our sports safe. Like and that, football.
The comparison to abortion strikes me strongly here.
No, but
I think
football.
A better comparison is to football or boxing or something like that.
Get rid of them.
And those. Well,
this is why you have women.
Well,
on
look,
the panel.
You know, right now, the New York City Council is considering outlawing, prohibiting tackle football.
No, it's the
12,
state.
12
the state's,
years and under,
the
and
state's
the state's looking at it too,
yeah.
And other states looking at it too. So it's not unusual in a free democracy.
Well, but there's a difference there in that's children, right? Well, and so they can't make the affirmative decision to participate, knowing the consequences the same way that an adult MMA fighter.
Well, it's at least two of the three professional teams, because I haven't seen the Jets or Giants tackle or hit in years, so I'll just pause that right there.
That was brilliant commentary, Bob.
As
a Patriots fan, I can say that.
Yeah.
You know, you're right on one point, though. It's the duality, the hypocrisy that we hold as far as rights of over our own bodies.
Yes. agree.
Well,
thank
even within
you.
The professional football profession, you see laws that are continually being changed to make the sports theoretically safer.
Right.
So there's all kinds of examples of a democratic process that allows the decision makers to decide which way they want to go, and sometimes it goes in your way, and sometimes it doesn't.
This is such a good example of a free range discussion.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the decision maker should be the people themselves rather than the government, as often as that can be the case.
So it should go up for a referendum.
No, I mean, what I mean is, if people want to watch it, they should be able to watch it. If people want
to
participate, they should be able to participate.
What'd you say, Alan?
Tell it to the Romans, to all those people who love to go see people getting eaten by tigers.
And we're not only free range.
Majority.
We're not only free range, we're organic. But, get back to Corey so that he doesn't feel like we've left him out. But this is why just getting rid of all of the regulations the way Trump has done is so dangerous, though, because there is purpose behind most regulations. Not that you need everyone, but that is government's role.
Bob, well, you're a bright man.
Bob writes to us and says, if only I had a Republican senator, I would call him up and tell him to stop wasting that. These are actual EM with the apostrophe, so I just want you to know that I'm not. Reading the letter as written.
Right.
Call M up and tell him to stop wasting time bashing the House impeachment inquiry and get to work passing some of the many bills the Democratic House passed earlier this year that would lower prescription drug prices, institute universal background checks, raise the minimum wage, ..
You know, there are a lot of people who have friends in Republican-held Senate seat states. So you can't call because they won't take your call, but you can call your friend and say, you do it. And, I never thought of that. Oh, God, that's a good idea. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, you try to make your vote count, right?
And by the way, that's going to happen in 2020, because we know where these few states that made all the difference the last time were, and that's why if you're voting in New York, it may not help, but if you go down to one of those states or you call your friends in those states, that can make a huge difference. We're talking about a handful of votes.
Let's go to this letter from Jeremy, who says the best outcome is for the Dems to impeach, make a good case, give it a little time to sink in. Republican senators do not remove, become contaminated by the whole affair, and Trump and the Republicans lose big in 2020. Losing big is important.
Could happen.
All right. We now go to the letter from Dean, who says, do you think enough senators will vote for impeachment because it is their best chance to finally get rid of Trump and some political cover? Which we sort of have talked about.
And by the way, you're confusing impeachment and conviction, but let's leave that alone. In other words, the senators are going to vote for either conviction or not conviction. They're not voting for impeachment.
All right.
I think you're going to see a few cross the line, but it will be just enough not to uphold the House's position. I don't see that number of mass defections unless something really, really strange happens.
That's true. And we still have time for that to happen. We still have plenty of time for that.
It's not that hard, though, to get
15-minute block.
It's not that hard to identify 10 Republican senators who could vote for it, right? And if you can get to 10, it's not that hard to get to 17 and 18. Well, maybe it is hard, but there's a path where it could happen, but something dramatic has to change.
We're not talking about profiles and courage here. I mean, if you look at what's happened with the Senate, is that there used to be what we consider to be giants of the Senate, true statesmen that actually could cross the boundaries and what was good for the country. You don't see it. Romney is back as sort of plays this hokey pokey game a little bit in, a little bit out.
That's why I said earlier public opinion is what's really going to drive this, because politicians respond to public opinion. And if they think their voters are a certain way, that's the way that they're going to go too.
You know, just because we've got a couple minutes before the top, though, two interesting things that I read yesterday after our discussion, because one, Alan asked a question yesterday about interested in the polling following the capture. And there is no I looked last night and I couldn't find anything concrete on that. But the latest numbers that came out yesterday for Trump and his base show, guess what? 41%. It's exact same numbers. But what is creeping up, not a lot, but 1-3 percentage points every time they take it is not for the investigation, but for actual impeachment and indictment of the president. And those numbers, and I know this, there was a poll on this last week that we did talk about, those numbers are coming from the independents.
Well, you know, I was,
and as long as we're looking at polls, we may as well look at that New Hampshire poll,
right?
Which shows Liz and Bernie leading the pack over Biden.
Well,
which could make a difference.
Also, Alan, the other thing that I read last night that I found I thought maybe we could talk about it, but maybe later in the week. But I was, but why not now? Iowa, where there is, they're worried about Joe Biden coming in fourth, mm-hmm. and Democratic leaders and people on the ground in Iowa are trying to gear the Biden campaign for that to figure out what to do. That is interesting.
Well, they've been kind of de-emphasizing Iowa for a while now and saying that, well, they could lose in Iowa and New Hampshire and still be okay. Because
absolutely.
And
look at South Carolina.
Yeah, fourth.
Yeah. I mean, fourth place, though?
Yeah, but Iowa's done some weird stuff in the past.
Well, so is New Hampshire.
His rally sizes are down, and his money is down, too. It isn't just one bad poll in Iowa that's getting Biden. It's unbelievable to me that a man who's touting himself as the one to beat Trump has been so awkward in dealing with this whole attack that in Ukraine. He should be winning because of that.
But it is still true that if you look at the state-by-state polls, Biden versus Trump, he does do better than most of the other candidates.
Absolutely.
In those face-to-face races.
The progressives scare too many people. That's the problem. They know it themselves.
Me.
Sorry.
Yeah, they scare me.
All right, let's... It's the day to be scared. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll hear from Desmond. He's a 10-year-old. He wrote to us. We'll hear his letter when we come back.
It's like Ellen. We get the little kids on.
That's right. Or Art Ling letter, depending on your your vintage.
That's old.
We'll be back after this. I'm forever indebted to John for writing that letter earlier today.
Lord, I'm so tired. Thank you, John. Thank you. That is awesome.
Thank you, Bob. I felt bad that we were going to cut that part off, but you did it. I so appreciate that. That's great. Let's go to letters. Desmond is 10 years old and says, every day I love to listen to the roundtable talk about the impeachment of Trump. I'm so happy that they are going to get him impeached. Oh, and I'm homeschooled. So that's how I'm writing right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's got to be homeschooled, right?
Now for the question.
Otherwise, he's got earphones on during his class.
Now for the question. Who is going to be president if he gets impeached? Is it going to be Pence, or are they going to have a re-election?
No, it would be Pence. Pence would be, he's next in the line of succession, and that's exactly what happened with Ford and Nixon. And thank you so much for your letter, and there's a school I want you to think about when you're ready for college, and it's College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at Albany, because I love students like you.
Excellent. Nice plug, Bob.
Thank you.
Just you checking. That right in.
Hey, just because I beat you guys.
History there. I'm just checking.
Promote the man.
Ford was not the vice president at the time.
No, he? Rockefeller.
Right. So how it worked a little
out.
Differently. It will be a little different.
I thought you were Ford's vice president.
No, Ford was not the vice president.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. I misheard.
No, Spiro Agnew was the vice president. He'd already been indicted, I believe.
He had been
No, Spiro Agnew got out. Yeah. He quit.
Yeah.
He was the vice president. Spiro said no lo contendere, if you remember.
Yeah. That was why Ford got so much criticism, that his getting the vice presidency was seen as part of a deal that included pardon, which was his first action, and it doomed him to one term
president. No question. Appointed by the House? How did he become vice president? Because it wasn't an election.
You get picked. You get picked by the sitting president.
Yeah.
So
Nixon picked him.
What's bugging me right now is that Desmond knows the answer to these questions.
Okay.
I think we should invite him on.
I think so. That'd be great. Have Desmond as our...
One more point, though. Then in the line of succession, though, then it goes to the Speaker of the House.
That's right. If Pence were indicted or in part of this... issue, then yes, it would go to the Speaker of the House.
And boy, have you listened to him lately? He ought to be investigated. Trump threw him under the bus, and his own answers are so squirrely. Have you listened to them? his being asked about the Ukraine thing. He's involved.
Yeah, but let's get this all straight, just because it's offensive not to have it right. If a president is sitting in office, he gets to name his vice president.
Right.
So that's how Rockefeller, we got Rockefeller.
Right.
What?
Go ahead.
Well, I thought you said not what?
No. I want to listen to your whole thing, Alan.
Okay. If somebody
I will never
is the
interrupt.
That's
too,
funny.
Too late, but go ahead.
That is funny. No, if there's a sitting president, if there is not a sitting president, then it's going to go to the Speaker of the House that in terms of the way it works. But go read the amendment and you'll see that that it's all spelled out about how it goes.
All right. Thank you for that letter, Desmond. We appreciate you being a part of the conversation. Susan writes, when the debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the losers. That is a Socrates quote. I'm not quite sure why we got it, but thank you.
Well, but it's very apropos for this president.
That's true.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Yes. Mario says, while Trump has been largely openly hostile to people of color, the hostility is increasingly being directed towards white folks as evidenced against the Ukrainian soldier. By keeping quiet, it's only a matter of time before evil knocks at your door. We go.
Wait a sec. I'm sorry. The Ukrainian soldier is
I think he's talking about
the
lieutenant colonel.
Okay. Yeah. He's an American citizen. He's a sworn officer. He's served this country for decades. I don't want anyone to think that he's a Ukrainian.
That's a good point.
Let's see. Don says the evidence is overwhelming. The Trump White House was using military aid as leverage to persuade the Ukrainian government to find dirt on former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter. This evidence consists of one, a partial transcript of the infamous phone call between Trump and the Ukrainian president, two, testimony by U.S. diplomats and a staff member of the National Security Council, and three, acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney's public admission of quid pro quo. In spite of all the evidence, Republican political leaders are refusing to acknowledge the fact that Trump violated federal laws and that his actions provide a legitimate basis for impeachment. Republicans have chose not to believe their lying eyes.
Yeah, and a point that was made yesterday, I believe it was on CNN, but don't hold me to it, is that, this isn't just quid pro quo, it's extortion.
Yep.
And that we've sort of wrapped up what is going on in sort of these nice little words, but it's truly extortion. It's either, we're not going to give you weapons and support unless you do this for us. That's where this relationship is. And I'm really surprised that we haven't heard more about Mulvaney, although I saw something just come across the ticker that he wasn't even involved in the whole ISIS situation,
yeah,
which sort of tells you that he's most likely putting his house on the market at some point soon.
The ticker?
Yeah, ticker. The thing that runs on the
scroll on the bottom.
The scroll on the bottom.
Okay.
Is that it?
You know, we pay an awful lot of attention to Trump and to what's going on in the federal government, but something really despicable is happening on the state level. I just wanted to mention it, and we can go back to Trump if you like, and that is that Andrew Cuomo and Jay Jacobs are trying to make it impossible for the Working Families Party to continue. And I think that is particularly despicable. We know that the Working Families Party endorsed his opponent in the primary and that he hasn't forgotten it. And, I like it when Andrew comes on and talks to me. But, hey, right is right and wrong is wrong. And this is just not right.
Well, Alan, I really appreciate you bringing that up, because what Democrats in this state ought to be asking themselves right now, because it's even more complicated than that now with this new proposal that he made yesterday, is Democrats should be asking, why is the chairman of the New York State Democratic Party proposing a policy that would actually give Republicans and conservatives a significant advantage in swing districts across this state? Why is he doing that? That is what is going on right now, and I think Democrats should really be asking that
question. How would it do that?
How would it do that? Because his new proposal is that you have to get 250 votes to be able to appear on the ballot as a party.
Not 200.
I'm sorry, 250,000. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Alan. Right.
Well, right now, in order to get on the ballot, you need 50,000 votes to have a permanent place on the ballot, right?
Right.
We know that.
Right.
So Cuomo was saying, okay, let's get rid of this Working Families Party, and we'll do it by raising the numbers that they need to do to be on the ballot. And that's disgusting.
Because the conservative party would be able to meet that bar. They've proven to do that before.
And the Republicans. But he doesn't care about them. They're the minority in New York right now.
In swing districts, both in state races and in congressional races, the conservative party has a significant sway. And that, combined with the Republican vote, can really make it even harder for Democrats to win a seat.
But not if you get rid of across endorsements, though, right?
Well,
because then it could draw votes away from the Republican
candidate. I see it as separate issues, personally. Yeah. I mean, one is the whole fusion voting issue. But right. one, the other is allowing, you know, what the bar is to be able to get on the ballot as a party.
Right, but you could argue that if they do get rid of fusion voting and raise the bar to a level that only the conservative party, then you could actually be drawing votes away from Republican candidates if you really want to get Machiavellian.
Let's not get confused here. This is done so that Cuomo can get even with his perceived enemies, you know, the Working Families Party,
right.
which is a progressive group of people who have done magnificent work in New York, and he ought to be ashamed of himself.
And right. they endorsed, as you pointed out, endorsed Cynthia Nixon the last time. And
that's
right. So... Now you get back.
Your listeners might not understand, because it is confusing, that this whole fusion voting thing. What it basically is, right now the Conservative Party, the Working Families Party, the Independence Party, which isn't really independent, they survive by basically grabbing candidates from other parties that have gone through a nomination process and sticking them on their ballot. They don't go through a nomination process as typical parties do. And that's what this fusion voting allows, and that's what the governor is trying to eliminate. They can, but they don't.
Well, they can, and let's remember.
And not all parties do that, by the way. There are parties like the Libertarians and the Greens who make a very specific point of nominating their own candidates because they want to be true, real, different choices for voters. Right. And I think that's admirable.
Right. They don't do fusion.
I agree. And as long as we're looking at this, the reason is here that you know, people don't want to vote on the Democratic Party. Sometimes they would rather go on a different ballot, and they do with the Working Families Party, a more progressive group.
But you still have to ask yourself. I mean, why is that? You know, the problem here is that the chair of the state Democratic Party is running this commission. He's running
a
commission.
Come on, he
is.
Yeah,
I agree with you. That's a terrible conflict.
I understand.
He's a toady of the governor.
But it's wrong. No, I understand it.
Yeah, it's wrong.
While we're on this subject, can we talk about how, because the other concern that has been brought up about this is how it helps the Conservative Party.
Well, I think it helps the Conservative Party because they have traditionally been able to meet a higher bar. They're just a more successful party in terms of voter turnout. When you look at these parties that engage in fusion voting, the Conservative Party statewide typically does just much better.
It helps them because they'll stay on the ballot and the other
right.
parties will disappear.
Right.
But what I was saying, though, is that if they stay on the ballot and fusion voting is eliminated, that could actually hurt Republicans in statewide elections.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right.
I think Chris
so Cuomo could be getting the best of both worlds, where he gets rid of the Working Families Party and handicaps Republicans.
It is conceivable. Yeah. It is conceivable.
And why is he doing it? Well, he says he's running for governor again, and he doesn't want the Working Families Party around to endorse an opponent in a primary.
Interesting stuff. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk about Syria for a moment. Dread in northern Syria as U.S. troops withdraw and the ceasefire ends. As the final hours of a ceasefire in northeastern Syria wound down on Tuesday, dread descended on a region once shielded by the United States. In towns and cities, families debated and sometimes fought over whether and where to run. Selling their houses to pay for the help of unpredictable smugglers was one option. Moving closer to the Iraqi border, where thousands of refugees had already crossed, and then praying the violence wouldn't follow was another. How do you decide what to do? Do we wait? Do we leave? Added a young student in the Syrian border town of Derek. There are no good options, none. The end of the 150-hour ceasefire brokered by Russia threatened to reignite fighting that erupted after President Trump decided earlier this month to withdraw U.S. troops from the area and leave their Kurdish allies to fend for themselves in the face of a Turkish military offensive.
Rosemary?
Wow. I read the story. I've read many of the stories. I don't know what to say about this. It's horrible. The Syrians I know are all in this position trying to figure out what to do, because it's not just the Kurds who are immediately affected, but this has destabilized another entire whole area of Syria. That means Assad has more power than ever, and their lives are all doomed. My friend is trying to, my closest friend is trying to come into the United States for a fellowship to get away at least for a year until things might change again. But Trump is even shutting down the number of refugees. We will have the We're on track to have the lowest number of refugees admitted into the United States ever in history.
And you know, it's for people that have already been significantly traumatized by ISIS, this is continued trauma on top of trauma.
Right.
And this is how you plant the seeds for future radicalization and violence. I'd like to note for everybody, though, it's about the oil.
Yep.
And for all of the talk about bringing troops home and keeping my promise and all the crap that you've heard, we're putting more troops in to protect, and I'm putting in air quotes, everybody, the oil fields. Mm-hmm. You know, I also don't want anybody to lose sight of the fact that we've emboldened the Russians. They're now a major player in a place where we had spent decades making sure they weren't. And the leader, the so-called president of Turkey, is more like a little Mussolini than he is a democratically elected official. And when you think about the history of the brutality and savagery out of the historically the Turkish military, and we're seeing that replicated, that this whole area is a mess, and it will come back and it will bite us in the keister at some point in time.
Well, that kind of leads into a point that I was hoping to make, which is that I wanted to mention that Congress yesterday voted on that resolution to acknowledge the Armenian genocide,
which is
very close. And it was, you know, we're always looking for bipartisan votes these days, and this one was. It was an overwhelming vote, and it was really kind of a thumb in the eye to Turkey.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that vote would have happened if what we're seeing in Syria wasn't happening. It was
good point.
And a little bit of a rebuke to the Trump administration, which doesn't seem to have been
happy
about this.
They don't have anything against genocide, yeah.
Well, you know.
They don't.
I know.
Well, I don't know about that.
I think they've set off close to a genocide in Syria.
And, yeah, I mean, that might be a little too strong, but they are among the many administrations that have not wanted to acknowledge the Armenian genocide because of the worrying about...
Since before World War One, Two.
Yeah, right. And, because concerns about, alienating Turkey.
If I were that pastor, the Gullen, the man in Pennsylvania seeking refuge in Pennsylvania because Erdogan thinks he was responsible for the coup, I would be very worried right now. I've been looking for stories about him.
Yeah,
I think he's really exposed. Trump would turn him over in a minute.
Yeah,
seems.
Very much so. And I think if he goes back, he faces not only death but torture. And Erdogan,
Khashoggi.
But yeah, but if you look at what Erdogan's done, I mean, his bodyguards actually attacked U.S. citizens who were protesting his presence, which is well within our rights, well within our First Amendment rights. To do. And so you look at the history, you look at the history of placating him and treating him as actually as if he's something more than a tin pot dictator. I really think that we have to rethink our whole relationship, not just with Turkey, but how we start to close the door on NATO involvement in Turkey. I think, sadly, Turkey may be lost for several generations.
And have we talked about how Trump downplayed in his announcement this weekend the role of the Kurds in catching Baghdadi? It's been our military who has said, we had a guy on the inside. He got us the guy's underwear and a blood sample. We have never had help like this. Even my friends at Fox were extolling the Kurds. And these are the people that Trump has said, no, we're going to work with the Russians and the Turks instead. Yeah. Well, it's nuts.
And Trump takes credit for all of that, right?
Yeah.
He's the one that did it. I mean, Trump was practically there getting the blood sample himself. I mean, he did the whole thing by himself.
Him and the dog.
It's just disgusting how the Republican Party has yet to call out this president as giving aid to the Russians in a very significant way that no president in modern history ever has.
All roads lead to Putin.
If you look at the map, New York Times has a great map this morning about how the territory has been broken up, and it shows the area that the Russians have taken over, and the idea that they now have been basically given by our own country, by our president, a permanent base camp
expand. There are lots of reasons that one could think about indicting Trump. or impeaching Trump and then throwing him out. And all of these things you've been talking about are good reasons, much more impressive to me than the reason that he will be impeached, which is over this telephone call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, one of the things that bothered me, Alan, about what happened with the Sunday's press conference is that I think it was really good news. I think a truly evil human has been taken off the planet. But at the same time, I feel really uncomfortable with the descriptions about the crying and his children and whimpering like a dog and those sort of dehumanizing terms. And the fact that we're coarser as a people because we celebrated this demise. And again, you get it. You know, there's part of me that says, don't forget that this sick human being took three children with him. And that's not something that should be celebrated. That should be something that mourned, that the lost opportunity for those kids. Again, it's not that I was supporting ISIS. I just didn't like the way the president handled the press conference.
I don't believe it at all, and I also don't support it. I'm glad he's gone, but I do not believe that the founder, the promoter of ISIS, died crying and screaming. I believe he was probably yelling, if at all, because how do we know? Trump wasn't there. Who heard this?
And he's a liar.
Nobody was in there, yeah, but I believe he was probably screaming, in Arabic, and they were probably triumphal expressions. I don't.
And what you're
it
all
all
saying is,
and he blew himself up.
And what you're all saying is that Trump is a bully. Something we know.
True.
Yeah. We'll end there.
Good summary.
Thank you very much, everybody, for being part and for taking part this morning. I appreciate it. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.